Hi, I'm WDOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we're here with the one and only Max Weinberg, who's going to be Weinberg's Jukebox, is what they're calling it, this Saturday at the Hamilton Live. Max, thanks so much for taking time to join us.
Oh, it's nice to join you today to talk, Jason. Thanks very much. Yeah, I'm going to be at the Hamilton Live on Saturday, July 13th. Looking forward to it.
Now, this thing is called, you're calling it Max Weinberg's Jukebox. So what all does that, you know, entail set list-wise? I mean, is that, are we doing a little Springsteen stuff? Anything we heard on Conan or any new stuff? You know, what do we got? What's the jukebox mean?
I've actually had young teenagers today who have been brought to my show. I see them maybe beforehand, and they'll ask me what a jukebox is. You don't really see too many anymore. A jukebox, of course, is where the audience puts in their requests for the songs. So what this is it's all 60s and 70s songs as requested by the audience right there in real time. It's music that I grew up with. That was the soundtrack of my life, and as it turned out, has become the soundtrack of all of our lives, everything from the Beatles to the Stones to Bruce to all the English Invasion acts, the Beach Boys. You name it, we play it.
That's so awesome. So it's an audience literally yelling out their requests. That's awesome. So obviously you're on the drums. Do you have a band up there with you? How many we got?
I do. I've got a bunch of guys, three band members and me, two guitars, bass, and drums. I figured it worked for the Beatles, so that's kind of a classic lineup. Works well for this repertoire. Guys that I've known for forever from New Jersey and the New York area, and it's a fun show. It's not a concert. It's a party. That's the idea. That's why I like places like the Hamilton, which has a bar, of course. It's a good place to spend a Saturday night. And hear your favorite songs. We have a revolving video list of about 300 songs, and people just yell them out. And I
awesome.
Sometimes a song will prompt a story from me that has either a personal memory, or I might draw a parallel between, for example, a song I played drums on, maybe on a Bruce record, that I lifted something from another record. So it's more than music. It's a little bit of my history as well.
Are you doing vocals, or is someone else up there doing vocals?
No, I'm not doing vocals. No, I've got three phenomenal vocalists who also play guitar and bass. So there's a famous story of me not singing in the E Street Band. When I auditioned for Bruce in 1974, the ad that I answered said wanted no junior Ginger Bakers, which was kind of a snipey way of saying he wanted an accompanist. But it also said drummer must sing. So, of course, when I went down to the audition, I said, well, naturally, I sang. So that 55 drum audition, I got in the E Street Band, and I was game. Vinny Lopez is a great singer, and he was the original drummer, and he sang. I was game. I would sing background vocals. About 2 days into my tenure with Bruce and the E Street Band, Bruce came over and said, you know, Max, you can just drum. So that was the end of my singing career, and that was 45 years ago. So it kind of all worked out.
That's awesome. Yeah. So before, so that was 74. That's when you actually auditioned for Bruce. Take me back even before that. Growing up in New Jersey, how did you, like, at what age did you get your first drum kit, or, you know, what bands were you listening to at the time that made you want to get into music? I want to know your roots of how you got behind the drum kit for the first time.
Well, my first drum hero was DJ Fontana, who was Elvis Presley, that is, his longtime drummer. Played with him from 1964 to recorded with him until 68. And I saw Elvis on the Milton Berle show. It was a couple of months before the Ed Sullivan show in 1956. And they had one camera shot of Elvis and his three backing musicians. And I went right to the drums, that drum roll in Hound Dog. It just kind of grabbed me. And, you know, people point to what was their first inspiration. That was my first inspiration. I'd already, you know, had rhythm banging on things. And when I was about seven, which would have been about 1958, I could play a little bit of a march on a drum. I didn't have a drum, but my mother was a bit of a stage mother and went up to a band leader at probably a wedding that we were at, or a wedding or a bar mitzvah, and asked if I could sit in. So I did. I played When the Saints Come Marching In, a little bit of a march. And the guy got such a kick out of it, he started hiring me as a little novelty act for his club dates in northern New Jersey. And I worked off and on with him till I was about 14, and started playing in rock bands when I was maybe 11 or 12. And that just kind of went on from there. So by the time I met Bruce in the E Street Band at 74, I had done every kind of job you could think of, from cruise ships in the Caribbean to strip joints. I played in the circus. I played a lot of club dates. I was pretty versatile as a drummer, which was coincidentally what Bruce wanted for the E Street Band, someone who could play a little bit of everything.
How did you hear about that audition? Did you just see, like, were you already a fan of Bruce, and then when you saw it, you said, oh, my God, I got to do it? Or, like, did you see it listed somewhere, or how did you find out about it?
Well, I wish I could say I was a fan. I had no idea who Bruce was at the time. I was in a band. At the time, I was going to college. It was 1974. I was going to Seton Hall University in New Jersey. I was playing in the Broadway show Godspell at night. And I was playing in a, you know, whatever club bands I could play in, whether they were, you know, sort of legitimate music or rock bands. And one of the bands I played with, two of the guys knew the recording engineer for Bruce up in Rockland County, New York, which is near Nyack, New York. And I didn't know Bruce and the E Street Band. It was called Bruce and the E Street Band at the time. I didn't know them. I hadn't heard them. And the one keyboard player, or the, both of these keyboard players in the band that I was playing in, auditioned, didn't get the job. And about a month later, they said, you know, these guys are still looking for a drummer, Max. Maybe you ought to call up. So I did. I called. This was a blind call, and I called their management, Bruce's management office at the time. And, you know, made an appointment to go down and play. And that was 45 years ago. So I hadn't heard any of the records, but, you know, the first impression I had was this was an individual who knew exactly what he was. I'd never experienced anything like that. And it was not only the way Bruce projected his personality and his music in the audition, it was the way that Clarence Clemons, Gary Tallent, and Dan Federici, the three guys who were in the E Street Band who were at my audition, it was the way that they responded to Bruce. So that was pretty spectacular. And I must say, it wasn't a terribly hard audition, because Bruce was so definite about what he wanted. And that made it, you know, I was used to taking direction from playing in all these sort of, you know, what they used to call legitimate drumming, like playing for shows and dancers and singers and things like that.
Now, I know he, before he, you know, dissolved the band in, like, what was it, 89, I know you guys ultimately got it back together, thank God, but before that happened, did you have, like, during that initial run, that couple-decade run there, did you have a favorite tour that you did, you know, was it the Born in the USA album, or, you know, I just, during that whole period, what was, like, the highlight of your life there in that stretch?
It's hard to give you the highlights of that whole experience, the first 15 years, give you the highlights of the highlights. It was incredible. I do remember with tremendous feeling of fondness and wonderful memory. The first, you know, that was really pretty incredible. You know, I'd gotten in this band. The music was incredible. Bruce was a phenomenal band leader. I noticed that right away. I guess the biggest impression was that for the first time in my life, I had somebody setting up my drums, which that made a big impression on me. For 16 years prior to that, you know, I lugged my drums around and I set them up, which was fine by me, but it was such a shock to actually have somebody doing that. But you go through all the tours we did, and they were all fantastic. You know, in those early days, you know, I guess that first one maybe was kind of special because we were together 24/7. We were driving around in a van. Then we graduated to a motor home. But so we were really in close quarters for many, many, many months on end. And so it was a real bonding experience. But to tell you the highlights, there were so many. I mean, you know, certainly on the Born USA tour, that was it was both fun. It was extremely rewarding. You know, all that hard work, you know, obviously musically it always paid off, but that tour really kind of shot Bruce and the band into the stratosphere, and that was fun. The Tunnel Love Tour was interesting. What stands out for me on that was the opportunity to play in East Berlin a year before the Berlin Wall came down, and wow, get a taste of the, for about 2 days, the bleakness of being actually in a communist country. And so that was very interesting. But, yeah, it's been really a pageantry of unbelievable experiences. You know, even the so-called, quote, breakup, which turned out to be an 11-year hiatus. So I guess you could call it a breakup, but in a way, it was this big interruption where all of us were forced. It was a good thing. All of us were forced to, you know, fly on our own. And as disconcerting as that can be, it leads to a tremendous amount of growth. Had that not happened, I would have never ended up for 17 years on late night television, which was a real and a phenomenal opportunity for me. And one of the best things about that experience was I was able to be a full-time dad to my two children. And I'm real excited to play. I'm always excited to play Washington for a number of reasons. I have a lot of great memories of playing all over Washington. But my daughter, Allie Rogan, who is with PBS NewsHour, is going to be there, and she's going to sing a couple songs. She's a wonderful singer. She's a journalist, but she... she's really, in our family, she and my son, Jay, they're the ones with the real musical talent.
Well, he's the drummer of Slipknot, right? Yeah.
Jay's the drummer of Slipknot, and Allie is a wonderful journalist who now is with PBS NewsHour. She was with ABC. She was with NBC working at the Obama White House. So the real fun thing for me was having a full-time job in New York, but being home every night. That's very rare.
Yeah, that's true.
Position.
Plus,
and
that makes
for 17 years.
Plus, that makes you, you know, a household name on television sets all over the country in a way that maybe if someone doesn't come out to a Bruce show, you know, you're reaching an even bigger audience. So that's kind of cool. Any memories of the Conan days? Because you're talking about the... some of the sketch, you know, comedy jokes of my, like, the soundtrack of my life, if you will, of all those late night skits.
Yeah.
We still quote them, all our family and friends. But how cool was it not only to be, you know, Max Weinberg 7 Max? It was always it kind of was our signature we'd kick the show off on. But how cool was it that eventually he started kind of weaving you guys in as sort of a comedic foil in some of the bits, too?
That was wonderful. You know, the late night television scene is radically different than it was when we were at NBC in New York at the late night program, and even at the Tonight Show. It's very, very different now. And it was a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to explore that, you know, that side of me that which, you know, Bruce in his book refers to my sense of humor, but I guess it came out in some pretty crazy ways on TV. And I think one thing people don't realize is it's a job like that is for everybody, particularly the writers, the comedy writers, is really hard. I mean, it's a grind, but what's great about it is you get to show off at night on TV. I had a wonderful band who worked for me, who were dedicated and fantastic entertainers and musicians. So it was a lot of fun. It's like any job; it's got, you know, ups and downs. But the interesting thing about it was different every day, different guests, different music to play. It was a wonderful, and also a wonderful way for me to have these six great musicians at my disposal every day to practice stuff that I didn't know how to play, that, you know, half the time wouldn't even end up on TV. It was just a way for me to kind of workshop. So it was it made me much, much more versatile than the years that I spent early on in the E Street Band.
How did you and Conan come up with that little, where you're hitting the cymbals, you're hitting the drums, and he's doing that little, it's almost like pull strings on his hands, and then he snips it in his hair and his pompadour fluffs. How did you guys come up with that?
Right.
Were you just ripping one day on live TV, or was that planned?
Yeah, no, it's a lot of that. So much of that stuff just happens spontaneously. And with that, the one thing I did not do, which all the other late night drummers seemed to do, which is why I didn't do it, was I didn't do rim shots, which became a funny bit. Where I was the reluctant drummer, and you had to specifically ask me to do a rim shot, and it became, over 4,000 shows, it became a comedic element. And but when the, you know, through my experience of working with dancers and musical comedy of Broadway type shows, and Bruce, where we started to play bigger and bigger arenas, I would. It's really a James Brown thing, you know, the drummer accents a physical movement, but it's a vaudeville thing. It goes back to the very beginnings of organized music in American musical comedy and light opera, where the percussion instruments accent some sort of physical, they call it business. And, you know, if a dancer kicks, you hit a cymbal. And so when he did that, the first time he did it, I just kind of followed him doing it, you know, and it would just add a little emphasis. And, you know, also you're on at 12:30. So, you know, there is a component of the audience who might be dozing off. So the little bit of physical, accent that I could provide with the drums might shock somebody into waking up also.
It was such a great run, so many great bits in the late slot. When he bumped when he bumped up to the Tonight Show, oh, in my opinion, NBC dropped the ball on that and got freaked out over ratings or whatnot. I thought you guys were plugging along fine, but how did you make the decision not to travel with him over to CBS? Was it just you were getting involved with E Street again and wanted to go back out on tour, or what was that decision like?
Well, the show ended in January of, 2010. And at that point, I had done it from, we debuted September of 93, but it started in May. So that was 17 years. There was a lot of E Street projects in the pipeline. And I was living in New Jersey, and, I had a house in Los Angeles. So it was a real natural kind of progression to almost like taking a fork in the road. You know, Conan went one way, I went another. And the TBS program, which I popped in one night, I was in L.A. to see Slipknot. And my wife and I went over there, and it was kind of like, not that I'm comparing myself to Bob Hope, but it was like when Bob Hope would, you know, dropped in on Johnny Carson unexpectedly, and that was really fun. But it wasn't completely unexpected. You know, I said I was going to be out there and said it would be great, you know, if you could do a bit. So I did a bit, and, you know, that was great. In TV, you know, you sort of, it really, you can see the progression of my hair from the first show we did to the last one I did, and it got progressively grayer. Because it's really a lot of work. It's much more work than the hour you might watch on TV. And in fact, it's become a very different with the internet. You know, we started that show pre-internet. So it was linear. And now it's sort of, you know, you're looking for the one soundbite that you can use. So it's quite a different landscape in television, and bands have the sort of typical setup of the host, the band leader, sidekick. To some degree, that's fallen by the wayside. We caught, as it turns out, the last years of the golden age of late night television, that particular show. But yep. I think the high point of the Tonight Show for me, frankly, was seeing my name in the same sentence as Doc Severinsen. That was a mind blower. You know, there's been like five or six, I forget the number of band leaders on the Tonight Show, and to see my name in the same sentence as a list, you know, of Doc Severinsen and Skitch Henderson, that was really, for someone of my age, that was something that was just off the charts.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad that you guys, got the band back together, as the phrase goes, and have been touring again with Bruce and the E Street Band, and get inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Yeah, that's got to be pretty rewarding there, sir, after all those years. What was that like to finally go in?
Well, I've had so many of my young, rock and roll fantasies come true through the years. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony was very nice. It was sweet. It was a bit bittersweet because Danny and Clarence weren't there, obviously. And, you can't talk about the E Street Band in no way, shape, or form without Clarence Clemons and Dan Federici. It was very nice. And, it was great having my family there. It's a star-studded affair, and my understanding is we went on too long, but I think we sucked up all the oxygen in the room. There were so many people on the stage. It was like an hour of speeches, but it was a fun night. It was really a fun night.
Yeah, and what I've loved, and I've actually gotten to catch you guys, I think it was at Nat Park, and I'm just blown away that, you've been at it for decades, and you're still, you're not showing any signs of slowing. You're still putting on those famous 10 boss 4-hour shows. Like, how do you guys see? I mean, is there ever a time been a little older? Let's go a little shorter, or if it's always balls to the wall, 4 hours.
Well, the length of the shows, obviously, and the song selection is not up to me or anybody else but Bruce. And if he wants to play 4 or 5 hours, I'm up for it. I have the physical stamina. I never stop playing. I mean, I've done 130 shows with my jukebox band, which largely is to keep drumming. I don't sit home and just, look at my Hall of Fame trophy, I've got to be out there working. And I enjoy it, and I enjoy playing with the guys and entertaining an audience and giving them more than what they bargained for. With the long hour shows, I somehow seem to be built for that. And there's a certain momentum that builds up. I don't get tired for some reason. Right. I don't know exactly why that is. I think maybe physically I've adapted to it. And I don't stop playing. If you've seen our shows in the last 5 years, there's always these between song drum solos for hours. And I've learned how to do that. So, a lot of it has to do with experience and discipline and finesse and a rock and roll spirit, which is what's been inhabiting me since the time I saw Elvis with DJ Fontana. I wanted to do that. And it's
adrenaline, baby. Adrenaline, baby.
it's not really I guess adrenaline is a small part of it, but the adrenaline can, just getting hyped up, that can actually detract from it. And I've talked to professional athletes about this. You've got to really control your that hypey factor of the chemical reaction in your body from just, adrenaline certainly helps, but willpower helps more. Otherwise, how do you explain, the 1981 Bjorn Borg, John McEnroe tennis match that went on for like 8 or 9 hours? It's got to be more than adrenaline. It's know-how. It's willpower. It's the desire. It's the desire to push yourself further than you think you're able to push yourself. And you surprise yourself, actually, on a physical level. It's physical and it's mental. And the other thing I recommend is getting a lot of sleep. If you're going to play drums with Bruce Springsteen, get a lot of sleep.
Final question.
Yeah.
If there was one, you know, you've toured and done these four hour shows forever, but if there's one song that you see not on the scene, are you get that on there? What is the one Springsteen song that you crave being on there because you just absolutely love it, and if it's not on the set list, you're bummed out?
Well, I take them one song at a time. I don't really even, you know, the set lists are actually, you probably heard, they're kind of irrelevant. He writes out a set list of 30 to 33 songs, and then right away he changed at least 15 or 16 of them, so you really have to pay attention. I love playing every song, you know. I love playing the songs that I didn't even record, you know, because they're all of a type. They're all Bruce Springsteen music. It's been said, and I've said it, that Ramrod is a particularly fun song to play because it's such a simplistic beat. And when I play it, but it's a particular groove. The beat is easy. The groove is not. And when I play it in a stadium, you can see people just physically moving that and to that beat. And that's really, you know, it's usually a place in the show where I can kind of look around and I can see, you know, the multitude of people, you know, digging that song and that beat. But I try to give all my abilities to every single song, every single time. I take them, that way it never gets boring. You know, I mean, I've played Rosalita 1,000 times, but every time I play it, it may be the first time you hear it. And it may be the first time you hear Bruce sing it. So he doesn't ever lay back. And in the 45 years I've known him and played with him, that is such a constant, is that he pushes and pushes and pushes to be better all the time. So when you're around someone like that, it almost by osmosis, you do that as well. And you do it by, if you have your own groups, by leading rather than directing. And it, you know, so I've learned a lot. It's been a life lesson, not just a phenomenal musical experience, you know, playing with Bruce and the E Street Band. And, you know, it really is about the stamina you build up. That's physical. You know, I work out relentlessly and I'm in good shape and I watch what I eat, but it's also the willpower that, you know, I've gotten it down to every beat, every single beat I play matters. And whether it's with my own bands or with Bruce and the E Street Band, the audience deserves no less.
Awesome. Well, you guys are always caring about the audience. I hope we get a big audience out at the Hamilton Saturday for Max Weinberg's box. Max Weinberg, thanks so much. You've been great.
My pleasure.